this meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:17 a.m. on Thursday, January 20th, 2022. First, I'd like to welcome everyone back to the committee. I'm excited to get this session rolling. And I want to thank our House Record Secretary, Leah Frazier, and our LIO moderator, Nate Williams, for helping us with behind-the-scenes work today. As we start, I just want to remind committee members to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Kaufman, Representative Rauscher, Representative Klayman, and online we have Representative Fields via Teams, I believe, and through the teleconference, and then myself, Chair Shragi. Today, the committee will be taking up House Bill 227, Muni Energy Improvement Assessment Program, by myself, Chair Shragi. My plan for today is to do a short intro of the bill and then hand it over to the experts to do a presentation and answer questions. Is there anything to come before the committee before we get started? Not seeing anything, I'm going to take a brief at ease to hand the gavel over to Representative Klayman so that I can do a quick introduction. We're at ease.
Meeting back to order, Representative Shragi, if you'd like to put yourself on the record and proceed with your remarks. Oh.
All right. Thank you, Representative Klayman. Property Assessed Clean Energy, PACE, is an innovative financing mechanism that enables owners of commercial and industrial properties to obtain fixed-rate, long-term financing through private lenders for energy efficiency and renewable energy projects and pay the cost back over time through a voluntary assessment on the property tax. PACE attaches the loan to the property rather than the borrower. If the property is sold, the loan transfers to the new owner. With lower energy costs, building owners unlock positive cash flow for their businesses and increase their building's value from day one. Passed in 2017, this statute allows local governments to create and manage CPACE programs. The municipality of Anchorage launched the state's first program in April of 2021. Other regions are interested in launching a program and are reviewing administrative options. While program administration is offset by administrative fees, staff capacity is still required to maintain the program and review applications. Alaska's statute is based on Texas's CPACE statute. Based on the growing success of CPACE, lawmakers around the country are adding new eligible uses of CPACE. Several statutory cleanups will ensure efficient statewide promulgation and will greatly facilitate investment in our building stock, especially at a time when economic development is needed most. Simply, House Bill 227 aims to expand CPACE in Alaska by allowing new construction financing, allowing resiliency projects, allowing CPACE refinancing, allowing for the consideration of market values rather than assessed values, and eliminating the savings to investment ratio, SIR. HB 227 changes serve the common goal of creating a large, thriving, and active CPACE market, which in turn will benefit Alaskans. These amendments were developed in coordination with the Municipality of Anchorage and the Alaska Energy Authority, using the best practices and lessons learned in the lower 48. In all cases, CPACE assists property owners in dealing with the upfront costs of property upgrades that create a public benefit. HB 227 will help municipalities and boroughs statewide achieve the greatest overall environmental and economic development benefits at no cost to state or local governments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Shragi. I'm going to go ahead and take a brief at ease while he comes back to his chair and retakes the gavel.
All right, thank you, Representative Klayman. I call this meeting back to order. Now I'd like to welcome Shayna Kilkione, Energy Manager at Solid Waste Services for the Municipality of Anchorage, and Melanie Lucas-Conwell, Portfolio Manager for the 49th State Angel Fund. If you both could put yourselves on the record and begin with your testimony. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for having us. Would you like us to state our name to put ourselves on the record?
If you would, please.
This is Shayna Kilcoyne with the Municipality of Anchorage. Melanie?
And this is Melanie Lucas-Conwell with the Municipality of Anchorage and 49th State Angel Fund.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having us today. What we're going to talk about is kind of the history and fundamentals of CPACE without diving too much into the details. And we'll talk briefly about CPACE on the national scale before dialing down into HB 227. And we'll allow time for questions, of course. Next slide. And I can't see the slide, so hopefully we're on the same page. This should be slide two. So CPACE, as Representative Shraggy explained, is a government policy. It says that commercial energy efficiency and renewable energy projects are a public benefit, similar to a sewer or a road extension. The state statute was passed in 2017, which allowed jurisdictions to create a program. Well, that was the hard part, and it took many actors to bring this program to Alaska. Alaska Energy Authority, our state's energy office, led a CPACE advisory committee right from the get-go, and we, you know, kind of stalled out and didn't make a ton of progress until all of a sudden we got a grant from the Department of Energy, which really gave us momentum. It allowed us to hire McKinley Research Group to create a market study, as well as PACE Financial Servicing, which is an expert in the lower 48 that helped us with our program design and implementation. So that was late 2019, and since then we've been working pretty furiously to get the programs up and moving. I'm going to pass it off to my colleague, Melanie, for the next slide.
Thank you, Shayna. So there are a couple different things about CPACE that make it special and why this program in the first place was introduced. The first one is avoiding upfront costs and barriers. So you can invest without any money out of pocket, no upfront costs for these projects. You can roll in your hard and your soft costs into the loan that you take out, including engineering, permitting, energy audits. So this reduces the barrier for this program. And I don't see the slides, so there is a buildup with the slides. If you would kindly, Ryan, if you would kindly move forward as I pause between the boxes and help me make sure that they line up.
Don't worry, Melanie, we're doing that. Thank you.
Fantastic.
And if you let
it's
us
hard
know
without
you actually
the visual.
Want us to go to the next slide, we'll make sure that we're on the correct one. So if you say slide four, we'll just make sure that we're on the correct slide.
Thank you very much. All right. The next element that makes CPACE special is the fact that it's a long-term, fixed-rate, non-recourse financing. It reduces the risk for lenders. Because it's long-term, you can get good interest rates. Currently, the projects are required, or it has to be 20 years or the length of the project, whichever is shorter. That is the long-term aspect of it. And the loan is tied to the real asset, not to the property owner itself or their own assets. So we often get asked what kind of interest rates people can expect. It very much depends on the lender and the type of term sheet that they offer, but also the fact that the variety of projects that will go through, different loans might be more or less appropriate. So the whole point of this program is to reduce the risks for all parties involved, from the property owner to the lender to the contractors, and helps put downward pressure on interest rates. The next element is that it's a transferable lien on the property. So it's tied to the property, as I mentioned, and not to the owner. It avoids any uncertainty an uncertainty barrier. And so when we think about property ownership that might be for a couple of years. And so for the lender who is taking the risk with this loan, having it tied to the property ensures that they don't have to do as much underwriting when it comes to the owner's credit score, bond ratings, et cetera. So reducing further risks from the lender's perspective and for the borrower too. Next is the fact that the CPACE is a priority lien on the property itself. So for property owners that have a mortgage or a lien holder, they would need to subordinate, and as part of the program, there is a 30-day notice of the assessment that will be placed, and the mortgage holder must consent to the assessment in writing. Next is that these upgrades and improvements increase the property value. So with all of the installing new technology, advanced mechanisms for the improved operations of the property itself, in the long run will improve the property's value as well. And finally, CPACE requires that the project pencils out. Per the current statute, projects must have a savings to investment ratio of at least one, which means that we know that the projects will repay for themselves based on the energy savings from the upgrades that they are installing. So projects are expected to be cash flow positive from day one, as soon as they break ground, and they're structured so that the investments are greater than the loan payment. Slide four, please. Although we think that CPACE is very innovative, it's not an entirely new concept. As you can see here, there are 37 states and Washington, D.C. that have enabled PACE legislation nationally. And through commercial CPACE specifically, there have been over $2 billion in investments that have been made across 2,500 commercial projects and creating over 24,000 jobs. And those are stats from 2019, so we're hoping that even in the last 2 years, despite the pandemic, there have been additional numbers that have been increased, added on here. It also means that we've had a lot of examples to look through throughout the development of this program and a lot of knowledgeable folks that we've been able to glean their insights and resources from. What we've found in particular is that CPACE is an important source of credit for property owners that are seeking to make the needed capital improvements and implement deferred maintenance of their properties, especially during the pandemic, and really help support these property owners. And it also helps complete the capital stack for projects that might have been tapped out with their existing lender and can help fill gaps that have been created by construction delays and cost overruns, as we all hear about in the news. Next slide, please. In collaboration with many actors, we were able to launch the Anchorage CPACE program last year on April 1st. And we've been in talks with a number of other jurisdictions, including Juneau, Sitka, the Kenai Borough, Mat-Su Borough, and Fairbanks. And we're particularly excited that the Mat-Su Borough has passed a resolution of intent for CPACE this past October 19, 2021, with a consideration for a final ordinance adoption in February. We've had an advisory committee that has helped us create this program and continue to support us and provide us information from the markets and challenges that might be seen through the lenders, contractors, property owners. Additionally, when we were creating the program guidelines for Anchorage, we worked to create a program handbook that is replicable statewide, in addition to any additional marketing materials that we might have created. We've been able to streamline the process in the last year, so that the program is a low cost, simple, and standard, hopefully standardized throughout the state, so that property owners, lenders, developers, energy professionals can understand one set of rules rather than different rules throughout the state. our application isn't very, we don't have a complete application yet from any property owner, because this is a new program and it takes time for people to learn about the program and understand it. But what we've learned from the lower 48 is that it's not going to be a huge influx of programs in year one and two, which gives us some reassurance. And we're doing it in-house. Shana and I are the ones leading the program and compiling these applications and hand-holding. In Anchorage, we have about 6 to 7 property owners and projects that are in the pipeline with limited advertising. And we hope that we will be able, the first project that we are hoping to close is a very exciting multi-million dollar project that we were hoping to share more about today, but unfortunately haven't been able to. Next slide, please. So to give you all an idea of what the eligibility requirements are, and Ryan, if you'll make sure that there are 3 columns on this slide, that would be lovely. As the administrators for this program for the municipality, our role is really to determine if the property owner, the property itself, and the project are eligible per statute and program guidelines. Most notably for the property owner, we check that they are the legal record holder, that what mortgage and property tax payments are currently on the property, and that they're up to date on those, and that there are no bankruptcy proceedings in particular. For the property itself, so we're currently talking about CPAE stands for commercial property assessed clean energy. So the property does need to be a commercial or industrial property. It needs to be an existing property. At this point in time, we only work on retrofits of existing properties, and it is not available for the cost of the facilities for underdeveloped lots or lots undergoing development at the time of the assessment, which Shana will talk about in a bit as well. And then for the project itself, a couple of points, as we talked about, it needs to pencil out and have a savings to investment ratio of 1 at least. And there is a 20% loan to value ratio requirement as well. Next slide. To give you all an idea of what type of improvements are eligible, we put together this nice graphic to give you some ideas of what might reduce energy costs for property owners. So as we talked about, all of these improvements, and it's not limited to these 8 categories, we've been hearing other ideas about what could reduce a property owner's energy bill, which would help repay the loan. So we always look at what these installations might mean for the reduction of energy consumption, or even in energy demand, energy costs, or the emissions that are affecting local air quality. According to the Anchorage Energy Landscape and Opportunities Analysis that was conducted not too long ago, it is a conservative estimate that cost-effective retrofits will result in savings of 20%, and that operation and maintenance savings of 5% for private commercial and industrial facilities will be paid back in about 7 years or so in terms of the investment. So we're particularly excited to see energy efficiency and renewable energy jobs and local jobs created as a result of these improvements. And I'll hand it over to Shana.
Slide 8, please. We often get this question, so I did want to address it. CPACE liens are prior and paramount to all liens except municipal tax liens and special assessments. So the municipality is responsible for recording the assessment, billing per the repayment schedule, remitting the correct portion of payments of the funds to the lender. The municipalities are not guaranteeing the collection of funds. And in the event of delinquency, the municipality follows its existing proceedings and is not required to pay the capital lender if the owner is delinquent. Once the property is sold, the loan is going to be sold with it to the new owner, and the new owner will make those payments and pay any penalties and interest. I'll note again, Melanie mentioned, this is non-accelerating. And we note here there have been no foreclosures as a result of a delinquent CPACE assessment anywhere nationally. Slide 9, please. So now we get to talk about HB 227. Thanks for sticking with us. Like it was mentioned by Representative Shragi, a lot has changed in the CPACE environment in the last 5 to 10 years. So we seek amendments based on those best practices and lessons learned. And we've done a thorough investigation of other programs and spoken to many PACE experts, including lenders, developers, program managers, and the Lower 48 to compile these suggested amendments. In fact, we were on a call just this week with the CPACE Alliance and heard updates from many states, and many of them were reporting new statutory changes, or they were working on statutory changes. So we believe these amendments will bring us more in line with the way PACE is being used in the Lower 48. Slide 10, please. New construction is allowed in 25 states and comprised about half of CPACE transactions in the last 2 years. Texas, which our statute was replicated from, is working to include new construction in their program. We have had multiple inquiries about new construction, for some of them very large projects, and this does offer developers more opportunities for financing beyond traditional debt, mezzanine debt, and it facilitates more energy efficient buildings than otherwise might have been constructed. So we like that. It reduces energy costs and emissions for decades to come. This is definitely in line with the intent of the original legislation, which is to reduce energy consumption or demand, energy costs or emissions affecting local air quality. Additionally, new buildings offer new tax revenue and possibly more housing, so municipalities like it for those reasons. There are multiple examples for how to create the program for new construction. For example, some programs require modeling above and beyond an energy code to demonstrate the increase in energy efficiency over a standard building. And as with our existing program, only certain energy savings measures would be allowable for CPACE financing. Those are details that we are still working on and exploring, and those would go into the handbook. I'll note this example here in Michigan. The developer of this, Comfort Inn and Suites, had already planned to use PACE to finance the hotel's energy installations with really efficient appliances, but then they became concerned about health of staff and guests because of the pandemic, and so the developer used PACE to finance a virus inactivating air purification technology and all of the individual rooms and common areas. I don't even know what this technology is, but it was included in their resilience measures. And in addition to that, they included 4 on-site electric vehicle charging stations. So CPACE has kind of become a way to help complete capital stacks for projects that might be tapped out with their existing lender and help fill those gaps that have been created by construction delays. Slide 11, please. This draft bill includes resiliency projects that support public policy goals such as seismic improvements and fire hardening. Current market trends point towards a growing use of CPACE financing for resiliency projects like this. So impacts from weather, climate, earthquakes for us, and other disasters can often be mitigated by improving building resiliency. And that typically takes the form of structural or envelope or systems building improvements. So these types of projects, of course, can be have a significant upfront cost for property owners, but it can also prevent major property damage during disasters like earthquakes and can help communities bounce back quicker from those natural disasters. We think Alaska would benefit from the application of a pretty broad authorization of resiliency retrofits as listed here, and that way individual jurisdictions would have the ability to offer regionally relevant improvements. Just some of the examples we looked at are seismic improvements in California and Washington, storm damage protections in Florida and Virginia, and more resiliency uses are under consideration in Michigan and Pennsylvania for severe weather. So again, there are many examples for us to look at. Slide 12, please. This language defines finance and financing to include explicitly refinancing throughout the PACE statute. So this will ensure consistent usage for all of Article 2. This does a couple of things. It enables an eligible property owner that previously used CPACE to refinance the outstanding assessment lien with the existing capital owner. Maybe they are able to get a lower interest rate or a shorter financing term, and then they can also refinance with a different qualified capital provider. But it also will allow property owners with otherwise eligible property improvements to refinance the cost of those improvements, even though they might have been already began or they're already completed. So this is kind of a retroactive CPACE use, and it can free up property owner funds that are tied up in debt relating to the property improvements for more revenue generating investments in their property. So this does support the intent of the original legislation that financing energy improvement projects through assessments serves a valid public purpose. Slide 13, please.
Shane, I'm going to pause you just really quickly. Representative Rauscher has a question.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate this slideshow and the information. But what I'm wondering is I see the end. It says CPACE can retroactively fund recently completed projects in California and so on. And I'm wondering, does this legislation give you the ability to act in the state of Alaska, or can you do it without this legislation, or why are there only so few mentioned there? Did they put forth legislation like this to make that happen, or how does that interact? If you understand the question.
I'm not sure I do. Are you asking California?
Mm-hmm. Representative Rauscher, did you want to clarify your question?
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, I apologize too. It's New Year, right? So you have California, Connecticut, what do you have, eight states or eight, nine? And I'm wondering why Alaska is not there yet. And does the legislation we're talking about give you the ability to be, Alaska to be on your list, or how does it work? Does that make sense?
I guess why Alaska is not listed as allowing retroactive CPACE?
Yes.
Representative Russell, may I maybe try and clarify your question?
If you should.
Excuse me, Shana, could you explain why we're not currently allowing retroactive financing in Alaska? Was this just an afterthought, or can you explain why we don't currently allow that?
It's not explicit in the original statute, and so we are looking for a little more direction in this updated language. We've just seen it as a best practice in the lower 48, and so we'd like it to be explicit.
So the answer is yes?
Representative Rauscher, I believe the answer is that yes, this was something that was not explicitly stated previously in the legislation, and it's something we've seen other states do, and it is a best practice that allows them to free up additional capital to make further investments in their properties. Is that an accurate statement, Shana?
Yes, I believe so. Melanie, if you have anything to add, please jump in.
So through the chair.
Yes, Representative Rauscher.
So your legislation will allow us to actually say that we are part of that list.
Representative Rauscher, that's my understanding. However, I will turn it over to Shana and Melanie in case they'd like to add anything, any additional comments.
I would say that it could be even more clarified, perhaps. It says refinancing, and that in the lower 48 means you can retroactively finance eligible projects. And so you know, if we want to be even more explicit, you know, we can be. I think it is included in this amendment, in these amendments, but something we could discuss.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. And maybe I'll just, Representative Klayman has a question as well.
I just had a question for, why is the 49th State Angel Fund actively involved with this? Because, I mean, are you all looking for these investments with your fund, or what's your role in this?
Thank you for the question, and a very good one. Both Shana and I have been working on this program as part of our jobs, our regular jobs, and so this is a small portion of it. And based on my experience with investments, with capital providers, and with private capital providers in particular, I was asked by the previous CFO of the municipality, Alex Slifka, to help with this effort. And so Shana and I have been taking different parts of the program and working on it. So it's mostly a staff time management and lending my expertise where I can.
Representative Klayman, does that answer your question? Well, would you like a follow-up?
I would like a follow-up, because my understanding of the 49th State Angel Fund is you're looking for you're looking to be a way to invest in startup enterprises that are either based in Alaska or that have an Alaska connection. And there's a certain amount of money that's come into the municipality through a federal program that makes it possible for you all to pick investments. And so I'm just wondering, has the 49th State Angel Fund, not so much in work, but have you all been investing in any of these so far, or is that something you're looking to invest in? How does it work in terms of the Angel Fund investments you're making?
Thank you for that clarification, very helpful. In terms of the 49th State Angel Fund investments, those are completely separate from these loans that are being made. The 49th State Angel Fund makes equity venture investments. So from that aspect, it is completely separate. And we, for the CPACE program, we collaborate with private capital lenders, most notably locally, Northrim Bank is one of our approved capital providers. And we have a list of other nationwide lenders that are making these private loans for the CPACE program. So it's mostly from a staffing perspective that I'm lending my time to the CPACE program and offering my expertise there, more so than from the 49th State Angel Fund's investment activities. I hope that clarifies.
Follow-up, Representative Klayman.
So you wouldn't expect the 49th State Angel Fund to be making investments in these CPACE projects. It's just that because you have some expertise in kind of the lending process, you bring that expertise to the program.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Wonderful. And Representative Kaufman, an exciting slide.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was going to hold off till the end, but we're kind of touching on the subject. So I think I just heard the source of the money is those various creditors. But I guess I would like to see like a flow diagram of this. So not just funding, but the process of how this works. I think that would be a good thing to see. But the question is, once financing is arranged and it is appended to the building, that's my understanding, is that the loan is marked to the building, not to the owner of the building. Should there be a default, who's holding the bag with that? Should that occur, if we end up with a building that got the loan, got some of the work maybe, and then something goes wrong, as does happen. So who ends up holding the bag in that situation?
So that will be not the municipality. We are simply taking funds from the property owner and remitting them back to the lender. So it's still going to be the property owner that is in charge of those funds and kind of at risk still with the lender's funding. This privately financed, and so it will be entirely between the lender and the property owner. And then we, the municipality, if there is some sort of default and we would need to go into some sort of recourse, we would go through our typical processes for doing that. And then whoever eventually, if the building is sold and then bought, whoever buys that building is buying that lien, and they will start making those payments, any payments in arrears, and picking those up.
Follow up, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Yes, and so I'm hearing that the loan, the liability, the obligation is, although the muni is facilitating the communication, that they are not in any way guarantors of the loan. That, and so, other than that pass through communication or facilitating, am I correct in what I'm hearing?
Absolutely, we are not at risk for any of that. We are kind of like a middleman, and we, this whole process is to de-risk the loan.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from committee members at this time? Not seeing any, please proceed.
Okay, and are you on slide 13?
We sure can be.
Great. And we're almost through. We've got just two more. So I want to note back to that slide about eligible measures with the blue image. Melanie stated that the current maximum financing amount may not exceed 20% of the assessed value of the property. That's at the time of application. There is an option for a waiver up to 50% of the assessed value. We have already found that this is fairly limiting with big projects that will ultimately increase that assessed value. The building, if a building's assessed at $10 million, that leaves them with a $2 million cap on CPACE financing, which if they're doing a big project might not work. And market value allows more flexibility in capturing that value of the improvements themselves, whereas an assessed value for the purpose of taxation really tends to be kind of less than the fair or actual market price of the property. So we're looking for something that's more in line with a as-built or as-occupied value to capture the upgrades that are going to be made. And then 25% from 20%, this is really just more in line with the industry standard. Slide 14, please. So the last one, as a refresher, the maximum length of the assessment is currently 20 years or the life of the project. 30 years maximum is more in line with the industry standard, and that is because many improvements that can be financed have 30-year useful lives or more. And through, for example, the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, we've reviewed the life expectancy of many energy products, which are well over 20 years. So we think this is a good, clean amendment to make. And then the savings to investment ratio, this is one that Melanie talked about. Government designed SIR requirements often generate kind of counterproductive results. In general, an SIR does not capture all the benefits from CPACE financing to property owners, such as the lower cost of capital or increased tenant retention, increased value of the property, as well as benefits to the public, such as productivity improvements or resiliency, those kinds of things. And so an SIR test doesn't measure the property owner's ability to pay. Instead, financial underwriting metrics that capital providers employ consistently and will employ during even a CPACE loan are more appropriate to assess creditworthiness. So these metrics are often what a mortgage lender utilizes to evaluate whether a project can provide consent or even acknowledgement of a project. If a new construction, I want to point out that if new construction and resiliency are allowed, then an SIR requirement really is not appropriate. You won't see an SIR above one for a new construction project. The marginal energy savings over a hypothetical baseline might be inadequate to cover the cost of those improvements. So we feel good about the 30-year maximum and removing the SIR in this amendment. And the last slide, that is what we have for you today. So we're really grateful for your time and we're happy to take any questions. This is our municipal website that you can visit with all of the documents as well as some of our YouTube presentations on how CPACE works, as well as our email available here.
Thank you, Shayna. And we do have some questions, but if you would just bear with me for a moment, we're going to take a brief at ease. All right, back on the record. Thank you for your patience. Representative Kaufman had a question.
Thank you. Through the chair, and either, I guess, Ms. Kilcoyne or Lucas Conwell, not sure which. My impression is that, so there's a benefit of this program because it facilitates the lending and to do these projects, and I guess what I'm curious is, what is it that actually facilitates it? What's the benefit? Let's say I'm a building owner and I want to go out and I want to get an improvement loan to put a new boiler in and add some insulation. And I were to go do that and I get the ROI, return on investment, because of now my building's tighter and it's more efficient in turning energy into heat. So I'm ahead. What is it about this program that creates an improvement over just that normal commercial process outside of this program? What is it? What happens in this program that makes it that better? Thank you.
Great question. There are a couple of things. With a CPACE loan, it is long-term financing, up to 20 or 30 years. It is fixed rate and attached to the... What is the term I'm looking for, Melanie?
It's a lien on the property?
Yeah, it's a lien on the property. So it's a prioritized lien. And one thing that really de-risks this is that people pay their taxes and they are paying these assessments. That's why there haven't been defaults on this. It comes above any sort of mortgage holder or other loan that you may have. And because it's transferable, a lender knows that even if that building, that property owner, something happens to them or they want to sell, the next property owner of this building is going to take over those payments. So it's kind of a handful of different pieces. And Melanie, if I've missed any, jump in.
Sure. And I'll add, too, from a property owner standpoint and having talked to a number of capital providers, both locally and outside of Alaska, there is a lot of risk in making these types of loans. And so having the municipality facilitate these loans, have these statutes, and show that there is value in these kinds of project upgrades, and we hope also new construction with the statute amendments, that we will increase the visibility of these kinds of improvements that are being made to buildings in Alaska beyond just Anchorage, that capital providers are not currently facilitating or not as fast or under the terms that we would like to see. So this program is really designed and has been successful because it spotlights energy improvements and energy savings, energy efficiency. Which, as we know, Alaska having such high energy costs is very relevant to our state, and helping our capital providers also have more security when they are underwriting these loans.
Follow up, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you, and forgive me for my interest. These things just always intrigue me. I'm looking for the risk, if there is risk that's created by the program. So if I'm the original lender and I've lent to someone who wants to buy a building, and so they buy it and they get in there afterwards and they're saying, yeah, I need to do this and this, and then they go and procure this form of lending in this program, does that transfer risk to the original lender, where they're going to be bumped behind now that this obligation is created afterwards? So either they accept that risk or they start to write clauses that prevent that from happening. Is that a scenario that could occur? Thank you.
Another great question, Representative Kaufman. This is mortgage holders or the initial lender often perceives this as a risk. However, what happens in the lower 48 is they often at first are saying, no, we are not going to sign this consent form, which bumps us down because that's risky. But then they see projects happening and they see that not only does the value of the building go up, the ability of the property owner, in this case, the borrower, they're put in a better position because they have a revenue stream right from the get-go. They are able to bring in more tenants. The list goes on and on. Their utility and maintenance costs go down. So in the end, it actually is better for them. And we, I think, have to be patient because they eventually come around and see that. But we are already running into this problem, and we think we're overcoming it with the first one, but we're going to see it again until we kind of get this going.
If I might interject with a question of my own. So did I hear you say that for a commercial property owner to take advantage of one of these CPACE program liens, that they have to get consent from their original lenders?
They do, because that original lender, and sorry, Melanie, if I bumped you, that original lender or the mortgage holder does get bumped in the lien position because this one is a higher lien.
And I'll add that that's only the case if there is an active mortgage. So if a mortgage has been repaid already on the property, then there is no need for the mortgage holder to consent.
Representative Kaufman, did you have a follow-up before I go to Representative Klayman?
I do. I have a follow-up.
Please.
Through the chair. If possible, I'd like to request information which would just be the sequence of the program. So the linear sequence of you do that, and then whatever branches that come off of it, that would help me understand more and also enable me to reach out to folks and ask a few questions outside of the meeting.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. I'm sure that they would be happy to provide that information to the committee, and we would then get that to all members. Representative Klayman.
So just in terms of this risk question, if I'm a mortgage lender to the property and the property owner comes and says they want to get a CPACE loan, the property owner cannot force me as the mortgage lender to take on what may or may not be an additional risk by the CPACE program. I have to consent to that as the holder of the mortgage, and so it may be an additional risk, but it's not one that's forced on the mortgage holder. It's only by the mortgage owner's consent.
That's correct. That's why it's important for us to share the benefits to not only the property owner but to the mortgage holder as well.
And so the analysis that I'd go through as a mortgage holder would be, do I think that the benefit to the property will actually strengthen the value of the property and actually make it more likely that the mortgage gets paid? So even though I'm junior in terms of payments, should something go sideways, I may be happier with the risk because I've improved the likelihood that the owner will be able to pay my mortgage.
Or we hope mortgage that that's exactly what – sorry for interrupting.
Wonderful. Representative Rauscher.
Just trying to piggyback on this present discussion, is the right for the mortgage owner to be asked, is that in statute, is that in regulation, is that your requirement? I'm just wondering, can it be done without them somehow, or is what keeps everybody in their own lane here?
I believe that is per statute, but it's also industry practice. I have not heard of any program not including mortgage holder consent, but that's an interesting question and something that we can certainly look into.
Thank you.
And I'd like to briefly take a moment to check in with Representative Fields if he has a question that he'd like to ask.
I do have a couple of questions. Thank you.
Yes,
one question is, who is investing in these programs around the nation, and who's not investing in them? Are local banks investing? Is it kind of large institutional investors? Is it private equity firms? Who's typically an investor in these?
If I may clarify, Representative, are you asking about investment in the CPACE program administration itself or making loans to potential property owners? What are you constituting as investment here?
Loans for the actual project.
So in this case, we've engaged private lenders nationwide, and there are a number of them nationally that have a specialty in PACE loans. So they are very familiar with guidelines across the country. And in some cases, they even have their own services that they provide, such as energy audits for potential customers, and walk them through the process, fill out the CPACE application, and guide them through until closing and then down the line. We haven't seen any private equity firms or equity investors step forward for these loans at this point in time, since these are loans and we do look at loan term sheets. But that wouldn't, as far as I recollect, there's no stipulation as to what kind of institution would need to make these loans, but they do have to be loans.
Ms. Kilcoyne, did you have an additional comment to that?
Just that the local banks are slower to jump on board, but we're excited that North Rim is starting to work with us. And what we have right now is a whole list of registered lenders that are from the lower 48 that follow CPACE markets. And we'd really like to see more local lenders participate.
Thank you, Ms. Kilcoyne. Representative Fields, did you have a follow-up?
An unrelated question, actually. So thinking about other public building owners like a school district, is there a way for this program to work for, say, a school district that owns a bunch of old buildings, many of which are outdated, that the school district frankly can't make the kind of investments it needs to because, you know, for example, the state hadn't been funding school bond debt reimbursement. Can public entities benefit from this?
Per statute, I believe it needs to be private. So a nonprofit or a church could participate, but not a public facility.
Follow up, Representative Fields?
Yeah, I mean, is there a reason we wouldn't want someone to be able to, say, loan money to the Anchorage School District to do energy efficiency or resiliency investments in schools? Is there a reason that wouldn't work?
I haven't heard of it being a part of PACE, but we could look into that. And we'll look into that, Representative. Thank you.
If I may add, because this is a tax assessment on the property, I believe it gets a little more complicated for public institutions and buildings when we're placing a tax assessment on the property itself as to who holds the current liens and the financing that goes into it, and how the loan is made, if it is through bonds or other financial mechanisms as well. But we will certainly look into it and answer that, since Shane and I being both in Anchorage, we would certainly love to see our public buildings also see some upgrades.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas Conwell.
Yeah, I get the tax thing. It's just interesting because, like, I know Anchorage is falling about $30 million further behind every year right now in terms of deferred maintenance just for schools. There's obviously a need. Thanks, Chairman.
All right. With that, looking in the committee room for other additional questions, and I don't see any. So thank you very much, Ms. Kilcoyne and Ms. Lucas Conwell. We will set this bill aside for now. It is my intention to move this bill out as soon as reasonably possible. So if there's any further follow-up, please let my office know, and we'll do what we can to assist committee members. The committee will try to work around the finance subcommittee schedule over the next couple of weeks. And so with that, seeing nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 11:12 a.m.